Hey everybody, welcome back to
That Music Show.
I'm your host, Branwyn.
And I'm your other host, Naya.
And today, we are going to be doing a little bit of a special episode, even though it's just episode two. It's spoopy season. So, we're going to be doing a little spoopier episode.
So, the theme of today's episode is music and film, and then we're going to also delve into horror films and how they use soundtracks to instill fear, hence why this episode is going to be spooktacular.
Ooh. So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite soundtracks, kind of like, and just more specifics of like what soundtracks do for movies and, you know, all that jazz.
The art of music and film, because it really is an art form.
It really is. Like, there's no two ways about that.
But before we get into that, we're going to do a little concert recap, because both of us have gone to a concert or two, maybe?
Yeah, a concert within the last time we recorded, which is what, like two weeks? 2 weeks we've been to concerts.
So you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I went to Toby Lou's San Diego date. I'm actually currently wearing my tour shirt that I got there, which was not planned at all. But it was a wonderful concert. It was a bit confusing because on the same day, Charlie XCX, I think is her name, was playing there too. And we got in the wrong line. And we were very confused when we saw the people there because we were like, you know, this isn't what I expected his fans to look like, considering he was a rapper. We were in the wrong line.
Not to stereotype.
Not to stereotype.
But Charlie XCX has certain fan base.
I was like, I saw the fans. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know Toby Lou had so many drag queens being a fan of him. I'm like, that is so awesome and cool. Like, that's great. And then all of a sudden, someone came over with a tour poster and was like, hey, do you want this? And we're like, oh, we're here for Toby Lou. And they're like, oh,
this is Charlie XCX.
Yeah. So we went around, found it. It did start a little bit late, but it was fine. It was worth it. I was very, very close to the stage.
I know. I saw videos.
I was, like, and my videos made me look farther away than I was. Like, I was third row. And it was him plus two other acts, Femdaw and Little Tretendo, I think is how you say it. Both of them so amazing. Little Tretendo, I can't say it. I'm sorry. He is actually 17, so same age as me. And, like, it was really cool seeing him. I, like, immediately downloaded his songs. But it was a wonderful concert. I got absolutely soaked with water guns. His new song for his first album is called Waterboy. And him and his family, his mom and sister were there. They're both so pretty. Soaked us with water guns. And it was wonderful. And I'm very thankful for that experience. <Great. laughs>
It's so weird how both of us went to rap concerts, because last Saturday I went to go see Tyler, the Creator, on his Igor tour with the support of Gold Link and Blood Orange, I believe. And that was his fans or something else.
Yeah, I've heard.
The energy was insane, and I really loved his character Igor, because he essentially, his whole set list, he was in his Igor or persona, and he was really good at crowd working.
Yeah, I really want to go to a Tyler, the Creator
concert. And I loved his
dancing,
even though it's a little goofy and eclectic almost.
Eclectic.
Well, because he was kind of prancing around, but then it was very, like, rigid and just...
I mean, that sounds like fun.
It was fun, and I love his, like, little blonde wig he wears. And the album's great, and he also played all this older stuff, which is great, like Goblin and his Flower Boy album, which I really like. So that was good. I'm trying to think what happened. I got my sister a t-shirt because she wasn't able to attend because I didn't know she wanted to go. But I went with my friend. It was really fun. So I'm pretty thankful for that. So thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, and thank you, Toby Lou. But yeah, that was our concert experience of the week.
Past couple weeks.
Like, my next concert I'm going to is... next year. I just got tickets for it, and then I just got tickets this Tuesday for another concert.
It's Super fun. M. Let me
guess. Yeah, Super M, and then I'll be going to 17 in. I go to 17 and then Super M. They're like a week or two apart.
In terms of, I guess, my next concert, so like the first week of November, I'm gonna go see 21 Pilots.
Ooh.
And I have pit seats, so
ooh,
we're gonna see how this mosh goes.
Ooh.
And then literally a day, like there's only one day in between the next concert between 21 Pilots and the next one I'm seeing, which is Omar Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited for that because I've been dying to see him. And every time I want to see him, I procrastinate on buying the tickets and then it sells out. Because he's on the rise artist.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to see his growth. So stay tuned on the recap of that for next episode.
Yeah.
So, okay, now we're going to actually delve into what the real theme of this podcast is.
Yeah.
Our podcast episode, I should say. So we're going to talk about film music. So just a little bit of background on film music. And then just a side note, a lot of the information we got this from was from this guy named Robin Huffman. So thank you for that, because he really clutched the research
This
whole episode. So the function of music in movies, as we all know, has a very wide array of, I don't even know what the word is. I'm sorry. I'm stumbling on my words. Today has been such a long day. And
it's
90 degrees outside today.
Oh, God. I dropped my phone and my AirPods within 5 seconds of each other. And they almost got ran over by a skateboard.
But anyway, trying to actually get this caboose on the move.
Caboose.
So we all know music can serve, you know, many purposes that are either important in terms of the emotional side of a movie, or they can enhance the storytelling of a film. So it's not only helpful, but it's actually imperative for any director or producer to keep the music in mind when planning or shooting a film. So there's a list of ways music can actually shape a movie and the experience for the audience. So the first one is actually commenting. So music can put a judgment on certain movie scenes. It can also state that, let's say, a certain battle scene is heroic and there's certain dialogue maybe, or you can have like a sad dialogue. So in actually the early days of music film, the function of music was just most of the time to just comment on the images. So you can see that in silent films around.
Yeah, because silent films, there was no audio. Like the most you would get, there was no audios for them. It was just a film reel with a live orchestra playing to like show the crescendo of the scene or any of that. And like the most you get word-wise is maybe subtitles. But like the entire movie was like based around having a music that kind of just like made it what it was, made it intense. Otherwise, it was just watching a moving picture rather than a movie.
Mm-hmm. And then a second ploy, is that the right word? Ploy. Yeah,
ploy.
Illustrating movement in a film. So accenting certain scenes with music to see every body movement on screen is also called the Mickey Mousing.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, in Mickey Mouse cartoons, when he like moves around, sometimes you can hear a xylophone plings, maybe if he raises his eyebrow for comic relief, or it makes it feel almost like a slapstick kind of moment. And it's even done in certain like dramatic situations. I can't really think of any off the top of my head because I haven't really watched any movie actually a couple weeks, so
yeah,
I'm blanking on that. But most live action or more serious movies also do this with sound effects by using other techniques and things to create better sounds than the originals.
Yeah, like I feel like most of us have seen those viral videos of people who do like sound effects where, you know, like they need someone to walk and they have like, it's someone literally placing a shoe down and slapping it, or using like an instrument to create the sound that like registers rather like to us, like, oh yeah, that's that thing, rather than the actual thing doing it. Cause that's there's a whole thing on that that I don't want to get into, but yeah.
Count the times, the amount of times you said thing.
I don't know how to describe it, okay?
Nah, I get it. And then the next is creating plot relationships. So giving certain characters, situations, or places thematic identities, which helps to connect certain plot points together. So for example, let's say the villain gets a theme, and later we hear that theme again when somebody talks about a stranger, and then we can get a clear hint of who this stranger might be, which I feel like you can see this a lot in the Star Wars films.
Definitely.
Especially, I'm only thinking of the newer ones for some weird reason, because I know the trailer just dropped, but yeah. I know there's Rey's theme, and she has that theme reoccur throughout all mm-hmm. the trilogy.
And then there's, you know, Darth Vader's theme. That's, like, one of the most iconic things, like...
And then his successor, Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren. We love Kylo.
Hashtag Kylo Ren challenge.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, no.
Do you not know what that is, the Kylo Ren?
I know what it is, but I can't think of it.
It's, you know, that one scene where he was...
Shirtless.
Sorry, it's getting a little PG-13, but he was shirtless, but then he wore these really, really
high-waisted pants. Yeah, like, that's what I was thinking pants. Of.
He wore these high-waisted black pants. Yeah. And then he was flexing really weirdly.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking
and
about.
And then celebrities like John Mayer were recreating the look.
I love that.
I do too.
But yeah, and other things with that, you know, like villains and like heroes having that theme music. Like it makes you excited hearing it.
Exactly.
Like it gives the characters an edge that like you wouldn't have if there wasn't a sound. Depth. Yeah. It's kind of just like... You know, music affects people more than maybe, like, visuals.
That's synesthesia.
Ooh, it's a big word.
Yeah, I learned about that in my dance class. It's how, like, visual representations of music, which is or can be dance, which is mm-hmm. why we talked about it. Okay, moving on. So music can create an atmosphere in films. So it can obviously set the tone of the movie and create plot twists. So an example of this can be seen in the intro of a horror film, very iconic, Silence of the Lambs, which sets the atmosphere for the entire movie in sight of the visuals being very neutral. So music in cases like this are just as important as the visuals.
Yeah, because like atmosphere really is, like even when you think of it in real life, the sounds that you hear kind of set the atmosphere. Like
leaves crunching underneath your feet.
Yeah, like, think of it like the woods. Like, if it's a very dark and still night, it kind of, it's very dark. There isn't many sounds. It's the lack of sound, the absence of life that, like, kind of freaks you out compared to maybe, like, a forest in the daytime. There's also the dark thing that helps. And we'll get into dark and sound
I think
later
because so.
That actually has to do a lot with horror movies.
Mm-hmm. And then moving along, besides atmosphere, music can help portray emotions. So music can serve the movie by getting into the emotion of the characters. So an example can be in the movie E.T. when Elliot says goodbye. So sad movies would obviously not be as good without the soundtrack. Just picture yourself watching that scene in E.T. where they're going home, but no music. It's just little young Elliot just sobbing in silence.
Like,
and then,
that just makes you uncomfortable.
Exactly. And they would sound very weird and probably annoying as you wrote in your
Yeah,
scripts.
I wrote this in our little note script, but it would be very annoying if, like, you know, you're watching a sad movie and they're just crying.
Exactly.
All the time. And there's no music around it. I feel like
the
that's also...
The music builds up the scene.
Yeah.
I cried when I saw that. When I was 6, 13, 18, like, I cry. And my dad makes fun of me for crying at that scene. I remember I was maybe 10 and I was so into that scene. I was like, no, he can't phone home. Dad, this is not okay. And he's like, what the heck? This is just a dried up raisin.
A dried up raisin.
And I really felt it. I was really feeling Elliot's pain because of the music.
Yeah, like, I feel I have that same reaction kind of just like, not like, I didn't have that exact reaction with E.T. because like, I mean, things like that do hit me, but they don't hit me that hard. Like, I don't cry at that scene anymore. But like, when you see, when you see, I guess, like, you know, family splitting or like that, like, moment of heartbreak and then just like that what sound back.
What do you mean? E.T. was his family.
Okay, fine. Moving on.
He was real. Okay. Just because they weren't the same species doesn't mean they can't be family. Blood doesn't define family.
Blood is the...
Or I don't know.
Water.
I'm just thinking of that Harry Potter quote. Isn't it something like blood and family? I don't know. I was just trying to be sarcastic, but then a little unironic.
I think we got a little confused there. I do agree with the, you know, the blood doesn't mean anything.
Moral of the story, E.T. is a sad movie, and if you're feeling simpish, go watch it.
Thank you, Steven Spielberg. Well, I would like to just add this real quick. His movies have the best soundtracks. Like, think Jaws.
E.T. And then, fun fact, he's actually married to a black woman.
Like, really?
Exactly. Him and John Williams, I think, are on that grind. I was like, go you guys. Like,
and then Steven Spielberg. Yeah, it was Steven Spielberg. He wanted to go to UCLA, but he didn't go. And his backup school was UCSD. He was so mad that he only got into UCSD. And like, I...
You know, me too, Steven. Like, yeah. Mesa College was my reach and Harvard was my safety. Hence why I'm here at SDSU.
Yeah, I was just hoping I got accepted somewhere, which is ironic considering I was a pretty good student. I just didn't do any extracurriculars at all.
It'd be like that.
I didn't have time. I'm using air quotes. You guys can't see that. I didn't have time, aka I had Netflix to watch and friends to avoid. I didn't have friends. Well, I had her, but that was it. Yeah. I didn't have many friends in high school. I was a loser. I still am a loser.
High school is just like the movies.
It is.
Clicks
yeah.
all around.
Honestly, especially at our school. Well, let's not get into
this.
We're
not going to get into that because we don't want people to come for us. And we want them to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
So shout out to Class of 2023 and Mr. Olivero. Jeff Olivero.
Us. Yeah. I was like, why didn't you say class of 2019?
Oh, shoot, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of SDSU class of 2023.
Yeah, because let's face it, not everyone from our grade is going to graduate by 2023. I'm probably not going to graduate by 2023.
I hope I am. I can't afford not graduating 2023. Same. Anyway.
I have a PhD to pay for.
We should move on.
Oh, yeah.
So, next thing music can do in films, it can help with social, cultural, or geographic references. Whoa, little tongue twister. So music can actually work very well to make clear of the heritage of a character / group of characters or the geographic setting of the movie or scene. So we can see this in movies like Black Panther, where there's certain, you know, African or traditional African sounds and instruments that are being played throughout the movie.
Yeah, and then Lion King, that was one that I just thought of that has obviously a lot of stuff. But Black Panther in particular is...
Well, both the original soundtrack and then also the one that they put out.
Yeah, and it's...
By Kendrick.
If I'm correct, it's everything in Black Panther was done by an African-American or African, like, person.
Yeah, besides the composer of the score.
Yeah.
But he's cool.
Yeah.
And then movies like Mulan.
Yeah, and then Moana is definitely a pretty good example. I feel like Disney does, like, really good soundtracks in general, but they definitely focus a lot on maybe...
The ones that at least are cultural stories.
Yeah, there's not that many, but...
Some of them definitely...
Yeah.
I don't know. Is, like, the movie Pocahontas okay?
You know, I don't know.
You should ask your professor about that, because...
I should.
It's a good movie, but then certain things they portrayed is just, like, is that offensive?
Yeah. Or? But I mean, like, the one line from her father that, like, don't trust white men. I feel like that's a good message.
Hey, we can't get political up.
We can't. I'm sorry.
Okay, moving on. So time period or references can actually be said through music. Well, that actually makes sense. I don't know why I was thinking maybe that's a fun fact for the listener. But music can also work very well to establish a certain time or period. So music, for example, that sounds very Baroque, will put us back into the 18th century, maybe doing a little waltz in a grand ballroom.
Yeah.
And we're in Pride and Prejudice or something. Ooh. Mr. Darcy.
Ooh. And then you have things like The Great Gatsby that's like takes you back to the 1920s and just the age of jazz and being quote unquote free, just breaking the law.
That was the whole movie.
Just like I was about to say something, but I don't think I can say it now.
Yes. All right. Moving on. So music can also connect scenes or montages. So music helps very well to glue scenes together. So rather, harsh scene changes can be softened by adding music over the scene change. So when characters argue and the music picks up, but then there's just a break and it suddenly goes soft as one of the characters gives up and stops fighting and starts crying, that's when the music can really transform a scene.
Yeah,
I can't really think of any examples, but I honestly feel like there's conflict in almost every movie.
And yeah, like I know there's some like things that you could like use like specific scenes. I just can't think of them for the life of me right now.
Exactly. All right, so we're just gonna hop on to the next.
May as well.
Ploy. So manipulation. So any moment before where the audience might get trapped into maybe thinking that he might be the evil guy, the music can jump and manipulate in the way of working against these doubts. So,
yeah. I mean, like, with that, you can find it in a lot of movies. Kind of like, think of, like, the antagonist. Maybe, or, like, can't think of specific examples. The ones I wrote Halloween, aren't bad.
But then I was like, I've never watched those movies, yeah, quite honestly.
I can't. I wrote those in the wrong area. Whoops. But I'm just like, yeah. I can't think of any specific examples at the moment for that.
All right.
Y'all We're can moving do. On. You
We're
can
just going to move
us.
On, but maybe y'all could email us.
Or on our Instagram, post a comment with any examples you can think of. Make us seem like we're less...
If you have an Instagram, if not...
Oh, we'll make a Twitter
your
eventually.
Your thoughts. Well, I know, but my grandparents listen to this. I don't think...
They'll tell you directly.
I actually think my grandpa has an Instagram.
That's fun. He can tell you directly, though.
That's true. Shout out to y'all. Love y'all. But moving on. So... this one was interesting when I was researching it. So, like, alternate, like, the perception of time. So, the perception of time in terms of music is, like, a fantastic playground. I don't know why I said it just like that. My voice is just, it's so late. So, just by altering, let's say, the tempo of the music, it can heavily push or drag any scene. So, for example, we all know the iconic movie Forrest Gump. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. I actually don't think it's... nominate me for an Academy after that audition. But during the Run Forest Run scene, the slow motion shots are being scored with excitement, conveying, you know, emotional importance. And then you can see through that scene, he's also aging. Running for Jenny. Jenny. I'm so bad at acting. Wow. If I ever... You know, and that's actually why I'm on my bucket list.
To act?
No, to win an Academy Award.
Why is that on your bucket list?
I have a really weird bucket list.
You do, actually.
Another one of my bucket list items is to win and be on Dancing with the Stars.
Do you think you want to get the Academy Awards so you can go on Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, no. Oh, that's a good point. No, I think what I'll do is somehow figure out a way to make it big.
You gotta get that clout. It's starting here.
Making this podcast will allow me to accumulate clout, and then I will be on Dancing with the Stars, hopefully within the next 2 or 3 years.
Two or three years?
So, like, maybe after I just graduate college, I will be on the show. season 30, whatever. I don't.
30?
Yeah, because I think they're on season 27, 28.
Oh my god, that's a lot.
And I already know who I want as my partner.
Who?
Hopefully they're still on the show. Alan?
I don't watch enough to know their names.
Yeah. But I would love to be on that show because I really want to learn ballroom.
I think that's a good goal for you.
Thank you. Especially in front of millions of people watching me.
Yeah, I feel like that's a great way to learn.
True. And then, you know, 6 hours of dancing in a studio, that definitely is some great exercise.
Oh,
and
yeah, you can get that.
And I already have ideas. Like, I would love to learn through that experience maybe how to choreograph certain dances. I don't know. I feel like not even choreograph per se, come up with concepts for dances. I hope that they let the contestants put creative input. But I know they have had a lot of issues with the pros about creativity and the control of that. But yeah, I definitely want to at least do a hip-hop or a flamenco routine because I've not seen anyone do flamenco.
I think you'll do good.
That was super off topic.
It really
but if
was
you would like to know about my bucket list,
we can have an
y'all
episode
could just
that.
Message me or I don't know, just ask me in person.
Yeah.
So next is how music can actually imply a sense of space. So not only the perception of time, but also the perception of space can be influenced by music. So I'm trying to think of specific.
I feel like maybe, you know, scenes maybe like in space movies where it's kind of just.
That, and I was thinking of, you know, maybe a movie like Aquaman where they're underwater and implying how big and vast the ocean is, or like. How Atlantis is, or I don't even know what the world of Aquaman is.
Kind of just
is.
Like things where it's like
hard to
very
imagine,
grand,
yeah,
like
grand.
Fantasy things, or exactly. Like things we're not used to experience every day, like space, the ocean, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then next is creating unreal situations, which actually works very well with the idea of the horror films and why this episode is Halloween-centered, so characterizing nightmares or situations of shock or being paralyzed can actually be done perfectly by the music. So anything that gives the feeling of not being real can be greatly enhanced by the music, as previously mentioned, or can be tied to the sense of space. Yeah. So nightmares of the characters can be made much more impressive with the right music.
Like, I feel a very recent example of that might be It. The movie, I haven't seen it yet, but my friends have told me.
I have not watched either, but I read this one scene in the book. The book is very intense.
Yeah,
and that
is.
Scene was not appropriate at all. I was just like, these 12-year-olds, I was not.
Oh.
Like,
can we say this?
I mean, we're just going to, the hint of implying.
Yeah, y'all know what it is. You've all seen it.
The 12-year-olds just should be doing other things in their spare time.
They shouldn't be getting eaten by a clown in the first place.
Oh no, but it wasn't that sweetie.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but we're gonna move on. So next point, Naya.
So music can also create contradictions in films. So music that sounds like something that is not expected in a certain scene will create a feeling of something isn't right. So maybe, for example, a scene where it's actually very sad, but then happy music is being played in the background, you know, this juxtaposition idea, and then it leaves the audience with being confused a little bit.
And then there's also, you know, when it's a very, maybe, like, calm scene, but then all of a sudden this very, like, music
eerie
starts
music,
picking
yeah,
up, and it's like, oh no.
Exactly.
No. It creates
especially
a suspense.
In horror films, you know, when they zoom into the person, you already know they're gone. They're
like,
goners.
It's just like that. Just like that buildup. Like, you know it's going to happen, but it still
exactly.
surprises you because of the buildup of the music.
Exactly. And then next is parody. So music can influence very strongly whether we find a scene to be serious or laughable. But if y'all actually know me in real life, I actually laugh at almost 99% of the things anything or anyone does, which may or may not be appropriate, but I just really like laughing, you know, and finding the joys in life.
Joys in life. Yeah. I also laugh a decent amount. The thing is I just laugh when I'm very uncomfortable, like very
exactly
often.
Same.
I just like,
and that's dysfunctional speech anxiety, as I learned in my oral
really
comms
that's
class.
Like an actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow, that's fun.
Exactly. Not really.
Yeah, it's definitely not fun.
Bad, and sometimes in certain films where you can tell it's very over the top, or just like the horror film The Visit, or I don't even think it's horror. I would consider that a thriller. I laughed the whole movie because it's about these grandparents that, you know, get to spend time with their grandchildren who've never met them before, and their mom drops them off, and just they spend a whole weekend with them, and it just goes a mess. For example, there's this one scene where the grandma's like, get in the oven to clean it, honey. And then the kid was like, huh? And then crawls in the oven and she slams it shut. And then there's like this pace of like music. And then luckily she opens the oven up.
Yeah.
And lets the kid out. But we all thought that she was a goner.
Yeah, like I get that. Like for me, I laughed a lot at the Babadook.
Like, I have yet to watch that. Actually, it kind of scares me, but I know.
It did not scare me at all. I laughed the whole time. And actually, technically, my first date ever was when I watched it. And the dude I was with was scared out of his mind. And I'm just sitting there laughing.
I just know everyone calls the Babadook the gay icon. And
he is the gay
icon.
I can't describe it, but he is the gay icon. Like, he really is. Can I describe why? No. But he is, and you just need to trust that fact, okay?
All right. Moving on. So, physiological conditioning. So, music can also influence and stimulate our very basic emotions, like fear, and therefore evoke, in a best-case scenario, every physiological consequence that comes with emotion, like racing heart or sweaty hands, which is what horror films and thriller films, I think, do really well, obviously.
Yeah, they do.
For example, when I was watching Us, I was so on edge of my seat because I went to go watch it with my dad, and it was late at night on a Friday, I remember. And especially, you know, the iconic, like, it was in the trailers, too, that I Got Five on it, on them. Is it on them or on?
I'm not sure.
Let's look it up. I'm so sorry, Dad. I'm really just not representing the music taste you have instilled in me very well. Lunez. I hope that's how his name is pronounced. I Got Five on it. And then, you know, it's obviously a remix, so there's this orchestral, like, I don't even want to recreate the sound. But the certain beats, they, like, actually replace with the orchestra, and it just sounds really creepy. And especially the actors did a really good job as portraying the tethered people, or the people in the little jumpsuits. And
like, I didn't get to go see that movie in theaters because
you watch it, or
I've seen many clips of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing because I don't like paying for movie theaters. I really don't. I usually wait for things to come on Netflix.
Smart.
I'm very cheap. Except when it comes to clothes. I don't know why.
Anyway.
Yeah, next.
Next. So, implying size relations. So, you can see this actually in the movie Jurassic Park. A lot of the scenes, you know, maybe with a T-Rex, for example, they use certain instruments, especially when the T-Rex is stomping on the ground.
Yeah.
And then you could feel the characters, their bodies are shaking and the trees are shaking to imply, you know, how big this monster is.
Yeah. And then you can see it in a lot of maybe, like, cartoons and, like, older films. Like, you know, when maybe the tinier main character comes up to, like, the obstacle, which is the bigger, like, this very big, large character. Mm-hmm. And, like, you hear, like, the thump or, like, the tuba or, like the drum sound and like that big thump 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 for them, rather than like maybe a piccolo or a flute or a violin sound for the smaller main character.
Exactly. And then we're almost done, I swear, guys.
Yeah.
But another interesting thing is the psychological, not psychological, I need to psychologically uniting the audience through music. So one of the most, I guess, obvious cases of this function of the music are national anthems, whose, I guess, function is obviously to unite the nation. So you can see that in movies like maybe Bohemian Rhapsody, where they obviously sing the song Bohemian Rhapsody that many people adore and cherish today. And obviously when you're watching it in movie theaters, everyone starts singing along.
Yeah.
Like movies like Rocket Man, any literal song from that.
Mm-hmm. And like, honest, Bohemian Rhapsody, like in anything, like the We Will Rock You.
Yeah, we will. Like, just,
that's iconic.
And then in Wayne's World, when they sing Bohemian Rhapsody, everyone just jumps in and everyone's on the same page in the audience. Or in the Marvel movie, the Guardians of the Galaxy, when they start singing Hooked on a Feeling by Suede, everyone's like, ooh, good shot, guys.
You're so good. I don't like that song.
You don't?
I don't. I have very bad memories with that song. That's the only reason I don't like it.
Oh, yeah, you told me about this.
I mentioned that.
And then finally, the most obvious one, I feel like, for everyone who is a film...
connoisseur? Yeah,
film, film admirer is character development. So music can help the audience to understand, you know, a character and their storyline and how they develop throughout the sequence of a movie.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like that's such a... Like, if you ever listen to soundtracks, maybe without watching the movie.
Without the movie.
Like, you can kind of, like, notice more than, like, while you're actually watching the movie, like, how much the music really does express the character's, like,
exactly.
development. Like, I'm not thinking of a specific movie, but, like, maybe there's a character that starts off sadder and, like, the music's music.
It's a lot more slower paced.
Yeah.
It has a minor...
And then it kind of just, like, keeps, like, as the movie goes on, just keeps getting, like, happier and louder and kind of just shows their progression as a person.
Yeah,
exactly. I feel like that's my favorite way music really helps with characters or, like, movies in general, like, just showing the development of a character.
For sure. And then now we're actually going to talk about our favorite soundtracks.
Yeah, that was all the points that we
got.
That
was just all the points, just to point out, because... I don't think we really think about that when we watch music and listen to films. I mean, subconsciously, most likely, we all knew that, you know, characters and music, that can be, or that was not worded correctly. But, for example, you know, you can see a character's development through the music, and it really adds a whole nother layer to the film.
Yeah, it really definitely does.
Certain things like the manipulation thing or emotions... we don't, I guess, give a second thought into. But now, maybe that you've listened to us talk about it, maybe next time you watch a film, pay attention to these ploys, because it's being constantly used throughout the film.
Yeah.
And like, that's why they spend a whole year editing these films after they shoot it.
And maybe, like, go watch a movie and, like, do it and, like, watch it just straight, but then, like, go a second time and maybe pay attention to the music. You're gonna realize a lot of things you didn't realize first time around.
And it's more enjoyable, I think, when you're able to see the little subtleties.
Yeah.
And then along with, I guess, like, visual symbolism of films, it just makes the film more special and, I guess, meaningful, because that's what film does. It's just storytelling at the end of the day, and that's what makes it special.
Yeah, I think that's what it's supposed to be.
But moving on to soundtracks, I don't really have a favorite. Like I've said before, I don't really have favorite anything because it's very hard for me to pick. But I will say a composer I really admire is John Williams.
Yeah. And what has he done? Like, what are some soundtracks? What are some movies?
He's done Harry Potter, all the whole sequence of the movies. Yeah. But he hasn't. Well, I know in one of the films, I don't think he wrote the score for the fourth film and a couple of them, but for the majority of the films, he did the first three at least, for sure.
Yeah, and those are like where all the music we know of come from.
Hedwig's theme. And then he did Memoirs of a Geisha, which I was actually able to play in orchestra, which I love that soundtrack, so you should give that a listen.
It's a very pretty soundtrack.
What else has he's done? Jurassic Park, which I've also played in orchestra.
Yeah.
Amazing soundtrack, and the movies are really good, even though the CGI now, if you try watching it back, for those who are our age, you're probably just sitting there and like, this looks so fake. I mean, but there's Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Which actually wasn't that bad of a movie.
Quite it honestly. Wasn't really.
What else has he done? Maybe I should. He's done so much. It's pretty impressive how many films or iconic films he's been a part of and has really transformed. Yeah, he did all the Star Wars ones. How could I forget?
Yeah. And this is John.
Binary Sunset is one of my favorite songs in the whole Star Wars universe. It's that scene where I think it's Luke. I always get Luke and Anakin confused. But I believe it's Luke Skywalker, and he's on Tatooine. And then the sun's rising up. And then it's like this swell, and then the sun rises, and it's just really emotional. And then he's like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah. And then he also did Raiders of the Lost Ark for Indiana Jones, Superman the movie, Jaws. Another.
I've also played that in orchestra. That's probably why I really admire him, because it's different when you actually play the music, which, by the way, I played all this on the violin, which is an instrument a lot of film composers like to use because, I mean, it's an orchestra, so.
Yeah,
like, I think I played the soundtrack from Saving Private Ryan. He also did that.
Yeah, you've played a lot of his work.
Yes, he's a genius. Yeah. I wish I was that talented. Like, that's just so insane that all of that is just from his head.
That really is, like, I admire composers so much. Like, my personal favorite composer is Danny Elfman, because I love Tim Burton films, so, like, Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride.
I love Victor's solo. I really want to learn that on piano. Because it resembles, like, Moonlight Sonata. Like, the beginning chord progression is basically almost the same. It's just a little... The rhythm is a little different. But it's basically the same intro.
Yeah. But, like, I really like Danny Elfman. And, like, one of my favorite soundtracks. Because I have favorites of things. Or, like, I have lots of favorites, but I'll narrow it down. I feel like ones I want to talk about, which is like Danny Elfman's, like The Nightmare Before Christmas. I love those songs. I sing them regularly when I'm alone at the dorm and like at home. My mom and I like know them word by word. Like The Nightmare Before Christmas is like, not to mention like Spoopy, it's for the Spoopy theme. Yeah, but it's a movie soundtrack I really love. And then I feel, honestly, my all-time favorite comes from my all-time favorite movie, which might make it a little bit biased, but Howl's Moving Castle. I absolutely love the main theme. Studio Ghibli. Yeah.
I have yet to watch that. I feel super fake for not watching it. Or maybe I have watched it, and I just don't remember any of the film.
Oh, my.
I haven't watched Spirited Away either. I think I watched Totoro, or my sister really liked Totoro at one point, so she watched all the films, and I kind of would just peep in and just see her watching it on her computer, because we would go to the library and get movie CDs and rent them out.
We can't be friends anymore. I'm appalled right now.
I just know one of them is like a witch girl, right? Is that Spirited Away?
Kiki's Delivery Service. There's also a witch in Howl's Moving Castle, but it's like the Wicked Witch of the Waste. It's just Witch of the Waste, but
the West.
The Waste. But Howl's Moving Castle, definitely like my favorite. Merry-Go-Round of Life is a song. I apologize. My throat's being weird right now. But it's a song. I listen to it all the time. Like, I used to cook to it, like, almost every morning, which is kind of embarrassing.
A woman of routine. We love that.
Love that. And then whenever I'm cleaning, I turn on Cleaning House. Like, that like, is my favorite soundtrack. But then another one that I really like is from a movie. Honestly, I don't know how many people are going to know it. It's a movie called Chocolat. It's,
I think I've seen the cover. It's I thought it was a famous movie, no?
I thought it was famous, too, but I've mentioned it to people, and they're like, what's that? And I'm like...
It was on HBO, I think, or one of the streaming services. And then I read the description. I was like, I don't... Yeah, that film.
Yeah.
No, it was on Netflix, I think. That's what it was mm-hmm. for a while. And then I read the description of the movie. I'm like, I don't think this is a movie I'd watch, but maybe I will.
It's a very good movie. It's my mom's favorite movie, and so she showed it to me. And I really love the soundtrack, especially the, well, it's the first song on the album, but it's called Minor Swing. I really love it. I wish we could play it for you guys, honestly, but.
Copyright.
Yeah. But it's a very good one. You guys should check it out. But yeah, I feel like those are like my top three. And then honorable mentions, like Black Panther's soundtrack. Because that's a that really soundtrack. Good soundtrack.
Especially when you listen to it top to bottom. It's mm. so good.
Yeah. It just like Paramedic is
what Paramedic like, is the
ultimate hype song.
That, The Ways, I Am. And then obviously the ones that kind of became memes like King's Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of was the only one I felt. Maybe All the Stars, but that was just the fact that the radio would not stop playing that song.
I think it was because it's one of the safer ones for radio.
That's true.
But yeah, I feel, those are my favorites. Then Danny Elfman, I talked about him a bit, but if you don't know Danny Elfman by name, you probably know his work. He's done, I want to say, almost everything for Tim Burton. So if you like Tim Burton, you probably like Danny Elfman. Did he do
Edward Scissorhands?
He did do Edward Scissorhands.
I have yet to watch that. That film looks very campy.
It's, honestly, I would describe it as campy.
And I
want to
watch Crybaby, which is also a very campy film.
Yeah. But Danny Elfman, other things that he did other than, Nightmare Before Christmas, he did Dr. Seuss's The Grinch. He did...
the one with Jim Carrey.
Or
was that Jim Carrey? I hope that was. Maybe that was him at the Cat of the Hat.
No, Jim Carrey. Yeah, you're right. He did the new one. I think he did that one too as well.
Tyler, the Creator, was on the new Grinch one.
Yeah.
He made the song. That rap was so cute though.
Yeah, it was. I love that. He did Men in Black International.
The new one.
Yeah. I'm going in order. Like he did Justice League's 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh. Oh.
What
all the middle-aged moms like to...
Yeah. I'm looking. He did Oz, The Great and Powerful. That was actually a very good soundtrack. I remember it.
Is that supposed to be like a spinoff of The Wizard?
Yeah.
No, is it? That's what it's called, The Wizard of Oz. I just blanked
out.
Yeah,
Wizard of Oz. It's a spinoff of Oz. And then he did Silver Linings Playbook, Dark Shadows. That's a movie I
watched
love.
I think I watched it. It's about this vampire family.
Yeah,
right?
With Johnny Depp.
And then there's Chloe, whatever her name is.
Yep.
And she plays the weird werewolf girl.
Werewolf? I haven't watched it in forever. Yeah, and then there's also Frankenweenie. I love that. He did Alice in Wonderland, Hellboy 2, Charlotte's Web.
Good.
It was great. He did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Spider-Man.
But which one? The Tobey Maguire or Andrew
the
Garfield.
Original one.
So Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, the 2002 one. I'm looking at more that he's done. Mission Impossible.
That's where I got my name from, oddly enough.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's what my mom told me, at least.
Really?
So in the second movie, there's actually a character named Naya. And she was Ethan's love interest.
Huh.
And And then I asked her... why, and then she's like, honestly, I don't even know why I named you that. And I was like, that's great, huh?
Yeah, my mom had like a whole, like, she had a dream about my name type thing. Like, I don't know, you can see that in a few different like things. My mom had like a list of names she wanted to name me, like depending on what I looked like. But then all of a sudden she got this dream and it told her to go look in her baby book or whatever. I don't know. It was like of some horses. Like she knew I was the baby horse.
Horse girls are hard eyes.
But yeah. And then she like went through her book and she found my name. And so that's how I ended up being named after a goddess. Yeah. So if you wanted to know the origin of my name, it's after a Celtic queen / goddess. Who died of heartbreak.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really setting us up for some good success.
Yeah, and that's what I find online. But what she told me was actually different. She I couldn't find anything online about this. I only found about, like, the heartbreak one. Mm-hmm. But she told me, because my name means White Raven.
Raven.
Oh,
I was like, white raisin, sick.
White raisin.
I was like, I can tie back to our ET talk earlier. God.
But, yeah. But she told me I was named after, like, twin gods of war. It was Branwen and Branwen, because there's a male spelling of my name. But, yeah, that's what she told me. I could only find one about the lady who died of heartbreak.
Spooky.
And so I've mentioned my last name, but she's buried on a firth, on the shore of a firth. And a firth is basically a body of water where salt water and fresh water.
I didn't actually know that.
Yeah. I learned that just, like, searching up my last name. Because I typed in, like, Branwen Firth. And it came up, like, her burial place is on the firth of, like, the blank of firth. And I'm like, That was, it was very weird.
That's really in depth. You already know, like, our generation, when they have kids, are going to be some weird names.
I know. Just, it's going to be.
Taco.
If I lost a bet, I would name my kid Taco. Like, that's like a bet name. I would make a bet to name my kid.
Maybe Rex. Rex is a,
is a cute name.
But like what would that be short for? Is that even short for anything?
No, just Rex.
Just Rex.
I want to name my kid Alistair. I don't know why.
Alistair?
Alistair. If I have twins, Alistair and Arthur. that was so scary.
We just heard a thump after Alistair. The universe just willed that.
Oh.
It's now you have audio proof that you have to name your kid Alistair.
Well, shoot.
Yeah, that was a little spooky.
Yeah, we got really off topic.
I know. But wrapping this up, because we all know y'all have lives, and if you even made it to this point, we appreciate that. But
we really do.
Going back to, I guess, recapping everything and tying it all together, the Sound of Fear, I guess, connecting it to the Halloween. I'm just rambling. Very sorry. But the Sound of Fear can't be constrained by a single genre or instrument, as we learned throughout this whole episode. But as it's at its best, this music is as gripping as, obviously, the scariest visual. And it is, at times, timelessly evocative. Evocative. I am so over it. Evocative. I'm sorry, that sound really threw me off, and that's also what we're learning about oral communication. Some of the slightest sounds will throw you off so much, and that's me right now.
Which I have something to say after you finish that.
Exactly, like that time again is really throwing me off.
I keep scaring them.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
But music can help horror films establish a mood, build tension and atmosphere, as we previously talked about. So there's an art to a killer horror soundtrack. That song goes again. And arguably, a science too, actually. So I found a quote by this professor who led this academic study by the name of Daniel Blumstein at the University of California, and he investigated these non-quote linear sounds in movies and reported that horror soundtracks actually tapped into our primal fears, which is the science behind it, which is why we sometimes get the sweats and the chills.
Yeah,
which is really cool.
Yeah, like specifically there's an example, like with the primal thing, is so humans are naturally afraid of the dark. And no one exactly knows why. We're just so, like, immediately from birth, we're scared of the dark. And so there's lots of theories on that. But a lot of movies, like, tie into that, because there's actually certain sounds that humans just associate with the dark. And that's usually kind of, like, lower tones, which is why when you tie into kind of, like, when you hear lower tones in soundtracks or anything, it kind of, like, starts building up this, like, anxious energy of, like, oh, like, what's going on? Like, it's very cool. Like, there's lots of studies on it.
But y'all could research that at home.
Yeah, we're not going to go into it.
Go off, because we kind of did go off in this episode. But now we're just going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening to this episode.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it.
And this is really cool for us, because, I don't know, when we got here today in the studio, we were so excited to record, because there's such a good energy in this little studio, which I wish we could show you guys, but
I think eventually we will figure out how.
But like I said, thanks for listening and staying tuned. Follow us on our only social media as of right now, which is Instagram at That Music Show. And also follow College KCR Radio at
KCR College Radio.
And also listen to the other content people put out there. We have a website and...
You know, there's lots of things. If you like sports, we have play-by-plays.
Kyle Saunders.
Ooh. And then we have lots of other podcasts and live radio shows. Yeah, live shows.
And we're hoping to maybe get an interview in before the end of this year.
Yeah.
And we have some exciting episodes we're planning out. So please stick around. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Like, I'm really excited for our future episodes. So
I'm so excited for next semester.
Yeah, next semester is going to be...
We have some really crazy ideas.
Yeah, we're going to, like... up it a lot. We're gonna up it like a real lot, quick
hopefully.
But thank you guys so much for watching.
I wish we had a thank you count meter.
I feel like this is number 5.
This is almost as if I'm practicing, you know, for our Academy Award when we win a Streamy or a Grammy, maybe for best podcast.
Grammys have best podcasts.
I think they do. Let's look it up right before
maybe
we go
IBS
off.
Award next year. We should try and we should like do IBS. I want to do IBS, which is, I don't remember.
I don't know.
We'll figure it out later. We have time.
Also, we need to figure out how to sign off of these podcasts because we never know what we're doing. We figured out a solid intro, as you can tell, but we never know how to do an outro.
Yeah, we messed up this intro before. We had to completely cut that. It was all my fault. Along with also why it took so long to start recording. Also all my fault because I'm very, very stupid.
Shout out to Jacob.
Thank you, Jacob. But, I guess this is it for the episode. Tune in for episode 3. This has been your host, Branwyn.
And Naya.
Signing off for That Music Show.
Oh, I was supposed to say it with you. I'm sorry.
Do we want to...
Do we want to count it off? Okay.
Okay. Three, two, one. That music show. Tune in.
That was some enthusiasm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, you could have just stopped listening as soon as we started rambling. So, if you've actually made it to this point, comment peanut butter on our first post if we ever make it.
Yeah.
Okay, but truly, actually, goodbye and have a great Halloween.
Yeah, and a safe one. And don't cultural appropriate anything. That's just bad. Don't be dumb.
Eat lots of candy, but brush your teeth.
Yeah, you should do that. Okay, bye, guys.